Buried is produced and distributed by KETR.org and is supported in part by its fans and listeners who visit KETR.org and click donate. Sponsorship opportunities for Buried are available from KETR.org/buried.
Welcome to The Buried Lead. I am producer Jared Knight. That's host and reporter George Hale.
Hello.
And we are back in this sort of between episodes episode, The Buried Lead, if you haven't been following along. This is our opportunity to kind of break down some things that are going on the show, find out just exactly where we're coming from, where we might be going next. Here we are kind of breaking down the Waco Bay arc such that it was.
Yep.
The last three episodes, episodes 7, 8, and I guess 9,
mm-hmm.
Which still involves a lot of traipsing about in Waco Bay.
Yeah, that's one of the things that is so important to underscore, is that even though we're talking about two different missing people, they both had these ties to the exact same area of the world, which is in very small part of the world too.
Yeah. And for our tens of dedicated listeners who listen just for The Buried Lead, the other person, if you haven't been following along with the actual episodes of the program, Carrie Mae Parker, you know, we're following that, but you read that whenever you came into this episode. But also Sarah Kinslow went missing in 2001 and had connections in a lot of ways to Waco Bay, and so we got to hear from Louise Kinslow, her mother, on this most recent episode.
Yeah.
And you got to traipse about in the woods looking for... I kind of want to explore that a little bit. Do you mind?
No.
Filthy. Okay, so there was this one time. We have a guest to introduce. We'll do that in a moment. There was this one time, I guess, end of summer last year, right?
Yeah, it was last June and July.
June of 2017,
yeah.
When George said, "So, you're not going to believe what I've been doing." And I said, "What's that?" And he said, looking for bones, human remains in the woods. And anyway, I'm not going to say that's the moment that this episode really, or this series really got interesting, but I will say that I had not previously had anyone in the employ of the radio station that produces this podcast ever come to me and say, "I'm looking for human remains in the woods." So that was a moment.
I had never said that to anyone before.
It's not a thing that you had previously yeah. brought up.
No, I didn't bring a lot of experience with me on that particular front.
And so George indicates that he's been out looking, that somebody told him there's a body out in the woods. And so we had to go. I didn't go. There's no pretense here. I don't follow George anywhere that he goes. George is all on his own. Somebody's got to hold down the fort, and I feel like that's something I'm really good at.
Yeah, it's good.
So I'll keep the home fires burning while George is out traipsing through the woods. I keep saying traipsing. The fact is that you were honestly searching for something because somebody gave you what you believe to be credible information with regard to something that might have been in the woods, but this was about finding just exactly how many people have gone missing in Waco Bay area, which I don't think we can do, really, put an accurate number, how many people have gone missing from that area.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the lowest number could be 0 and possibly 2 for our purposes, or, I mean, who knows? But yeah, that guy, Mike Garris, didn't just give me directions. He said he could take me to a body right then and there. And so, of course, I said yes. And
sort of say his mistake, because you were game.
Yeah, I guess so. But no, I mean, he really... I don't know. I mean, it's a year later. I've had like communication with plenty of people now, and been asked the question if I thought he was just a nut, and I still really don't. I mean, he seemed to really believe that's where we were going. Yeah, I don't know what else to say. Of course, we did not find anybody. If we had, we would have told the police, and we would have told you, and that's always the answer to everything. But you know, still, it was interesting and disturbing at the same time that somebody would claim to know where human remains were and not have reported them.
Sure. Well, that pokes back at another question that comes up all the time that I think is worth reintroducing, if for no other reason than to get most of you to peel off right now, and that is that question, have you guys found her? Are you just slow playing? Have you found Carrie Parker and you're just slow playing for the sake of what? I don't know. We're not actually generating a ton of revenue off of the podcast.
Right.
So that's not really it, but no, absolutely, we have. She's not been found. I say we, and two, it isn't necessarily the mission of the podcast to find her as much as it is the mission of the podcast to sort of tell the story of what happened as best we can.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the first episode, really, I made that clear too, what my purpose was, which is just that we spent, you know, a year plus trying to find out how this could happen, which is how can someone go missing and nobody else would know about it? You know, the public wouldn't know about it, at least for so many years. And so I almost think of it more as like investigating an investigation than investigating a disappearance, because we want to know, you know, what went wrong for 19 years before Carrie's family discovered that the police didn't know she was missing.
It's hard to see too from the outside whenever you're not privy to the investigation, really, and you have only the efficacy of the Freedom of Information Act to get at a lot of the details that sort of push the story along. But for what it's worth, George, I think you're doing a fine job of it.
Thank you.
Yeah. as valuable as a compliment is coming from inside the house.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's worth noting. I want to introduce our guest. She's primarily responsible for matters related to revenue at 88.9 KETR, which is the station that produces the podcast. And two, she's primarily responsible for handling relationships with donors, both at the radio station and also for Buried. So when folks make contributions and support of the podcast, they will be working in some capacity with Corinne. And you may recognize her from some of the tags and other related audio from the program, right? Hello, Corinne.
Hi. Yes, good to be here.
There you are. And Corinne also introduces a coming up on Buried, right?
Yes, that's so, me. That's my claim to fame for this podcast.
She's had people come up to her and say, are you the one who says...
Yeah,
coming up on Buried. So who knows what we're even doing, but it's got some reach. I'd like, if you wouldn't mind, for you to make a pitch to the listeners of Buried about supporting the important work of trying to get at this investigation that we're trying to get at so that we can tell the story.
Right. Well, part of our mission, a very important part of our mission, is not only to bring you national, international news, but also to highlight stories of our own region. And part of KETR's points of pride, I would say, for this station is our unique mix of programming. We're not only bringing you news, we also bring you music, and we're bringing local interest topics such as Buried through this podcast. And it's not something that a whole lot of other public radio stations can say that they do, to bring you such a wide variety. And just like these national programs like Morning Edition or All Things Considered cost the station a considerable amount of money, so does producing a podcast such as Buried. And it also is a big investment in human capital, because you guys are here working on this, investigating this story that went untold for so long and deserves to be told as something important that happened in our region but went largely unknown for so long. And so listener support, supporting this program, supporting KETR in general, helps continue this service of bringing light to this very interesting and creepy story.
It's kind of creepy.
Very creepy.
Every time we turn around.
Yeah, there's just something else.
Corinne's a fan of the show as well.
I am.
Thank you.
She's been listening since day one.
That's good. Well, we've been listening to her introductions.
Also since about that time.
Yeah. No, and my grandparents grew up. Well, they didn't grow up. I grew up visiting the Tewakini area because they had a trailer down there. They loved to fish. So hearing this really hit home for me, and it's such a crazy story to witness as a listener and a sort of participant being at the beginning and the end of the episode, to see it come to life. So it also hits home on a personal note. And I think for many people living in this area, I mean, I'm sure they've heard or been to or frequented some of these areas, so it's definitely something worth supporting to continue so we get to hear the end of the story.
Well, I think it's worth too noting we have a lot of listeners who from around the world, right, who may not necessarily be familiar with the layout of the land or the topography or whatever it is of Northeast Texas, but Northeast Texas is mainly flat, right? It's mainly not a lot going on. Topography wise, there are some low spots where some lakes have formed, and in some cases lakes have been dug, but the area central to the story, we're talking about Quinlan, Tewakini, which is multiple places. East Tewakini is another town. Waco Bay is sort of a specific neighborhood. Hawk Cove is its own sort of incorporated town, but these places are all about 40 miles from here, 40-50 miles from here, Commerce, where we sit and produce this podcast. And so it's not very far. 50 miles is not too far to go. It's a lot closer to where I live, which is between here and there. But it's a nearby place. This is not a... I feel like our approach to a lot of stories in the news cycle are that other place where these things happen. But this is definitely a very real place that you can touch and feel when you're driving around through Northeast Texas. Lake Country. So we have a fan of the show on the show right now, which may not be the only time that ever happens. Not that anybody who's been on the show previously were not fans. I feel like I have to create some caveats. If you're listening in order, then you may, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's good to have people who are playing any role in the podcast on the show, and Corinne is one of those people. And it's a good reminder that this isn't only me and Jared making this thing. I mean, obviously we're doing much of the reporting and the producing of it, but this couldn't happen with just the two of us. And hopefully, every time we have this an episode of The Buried Lead, I would, you know, try to introduce you to somebody new who's part of it.
So enjoy while it lasts, basically.
It feels
is what
great.
He's saying. Yes, you're headed for the door, right? Whenever we're,
yeah, we're gonna replace
when
you
when we wrap. It. You're done. So enjoy the moment. No, the
but can you still do the introduction? And
yeah, actually, yeah, keep on doing that, please. Nah. We need it. listener questions?
Yeah, we have several. I've been saving up, I guess.
Well, then you already know what they are, but I'll read them anyway for the benefit of the listener, if it's okay with you.
Yeah, you can.
Here's a question from a person. I don't know if they want to be identified, so we won't.
Okay.
But it's in reference to a photograph of Carrie Mae Parker holding up her sign. The photograph we've determined loosely was the last known photograph of her, where she's holding up the sign for the Hunt County Sheriff's Department. It has a number, an inmate number essentially assigned to her. Do we know how much time passed between her driver's license photo, which has been shared pretty widely, and this photo of her holding up that sign?
We don't know exactly when her driver's license photo was taken, but according to her sister, it arrived in the mail after she went missing. So it really depends on how long it took them to make them back then, because she took that photo supposedly in Terrell, Texas, which is a little bit south of Quinlan.
And she along was, Highway 34.
Exactly. Yeah. And at the DMV there, or the DPS office there.
Mm-hmm.
She was with her sister. And so Patricia actually remembers going with her, but I don't think it was the last time Patricia saw her. And so anyway, it could have been several weeks before she went missing. The mugshot we know certainly when it was taken, which is February 21st, 91. So anyway, to answer the question, I would think very close to, they were taken very close to each other time-wise. I don't know which one was taken most recently, but I, you know, the mugshot is the only one we can be certain of a date. So that's the reason I say it's the last one we can know about.
And she's standing in the courthouse. And she's, or so presumably in the courthouse, maybe in the intake of the, in the Sally Port or whatever it's called.
Yeah, I think the jail was across the street from the sheriff's office back then. So okay. I'm not sure exactly what room they were in when they took the picture.
Well, at any rate, another question was, what were her charges at the time?
So very minimal charges. She was just arrested on a warrant, which was issued because she hadn't handled some just traffic tickets, really. There were three from 1989. I can't remember exactly which month, but it was certainly less than 2 years before she was arrested. She got a speeding ticket and then driving at an unsafe speed, which I don't know exactly why that's different. Do you know how that works?
Reckless?
Yeah. Like, I guess it's reckless, but
I don't know. I don't know what the actual
distinction
is, but I'm sure that there's people smarter than us with regard to that will know.
In any event, she got a ticket for each. So
how will they tell us, George, if they wanted to chip in the info so that we know forever?
They could email us at buried@ketr.org.
The people also connect with us through the Facebook page, facebook.com/buriedradio.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's buried.radio on Instagram, which is what a lot of people will
exactly
reply to.
There's a third ticket, too, before we go from that topic, which is a failure to maintain financial responsibility, which is just not having insurance. Anyway, so these three tickets, I guess, combined, or even I guess one of them would result eventually in a warrant being issued for your arrest if you didn't pay it or appear in court. And so seemingly she didn't. And so this arrest warrant was issued for her, which is, of course, very, very minor. I mean, but it's enough to get arrested for. And so in the next episode, or the next two episodes, I guess, I'm going to be talking a little bit about that arrest and what documents there are available to show us what happened. But I can tell you briefly is that a police officer saw her at a gas station and knew that she had a warrant and arrested her for it in Quinlan. So that's what happened.
Can I make a brief aside here and ask you, George, where your superhuman powers come from to acquire documents from organization, law enforcement organizations and other places
that are
government entities?
One is your willingness to reimburse me for postage.
But talk about that. You weren't bitten by a radioactive spider, were you?
Like, no.
You're availing yourself of something that is available to the public, right?
Yes, absolutely. Nothing that I've acquired, except in one particular case, which we'll get into more detail about later, was received through anything other than just me asking for it. And that's something that we can all do. We can all, the government institutions around us, whether they're big or small, they all work for us. And the information that is contained, therein or whatever is for us. And so there's a process under the Texas Public Information Act, which basically gives any institution like 10 days to respond to anything you want to ask them. And if they don't want to give it to you, they have to actually seek sort of permission from the state to not give it to you. And so it's really as simple as writing a letter. There's not too much magic to it.
Sometimes there's a very minor cost associated with whatever the thing is. But long story short is that you're not doing something that only journalists have the capacity to do.
Oh, no.
You're, in fact, just using your sort of legal right as a taxpayer to create a question about something and ask it.
Yeah, I mean the only benefit really of being a journalist is A, that obviously somebody is paying me for my time to send these requests, and then but B, and this is actually an important distinction, is that when we ask for something, it's considered, I of course indicate that I'm not asking for commercial purposes. I'm asking for under the Public Information Act to distribute to the public, and so most institutions and police agencies and stuff like that will see that request as a request on behalf of the public, not on behalf of George Hale. And so they usually won't charge for their time in digging that stuff up. And so that is one thing that we can do a little bit differently, is I can send out 100 different requests and not worry that it's going to cost me thousands of dollars because basically it's your information too. And so they're sort of viewing me as your representative or whatever, I guess. But some institutions do charge. The Greenville Police Department charges an arm and a leg compared to others. But Hunt County, by the way, has never charged us any money.
You mean in order to provide documentation to you?
Yeah, the sheriff's office has always responded accepted our sort of request that they view us as a representative of the public, which I think is admirable. Actually, they one time charged me $7.50 to print something for a second time that was very lengthy, but I understood that.
That's the reasonableness that they can charge money for whatever it costs to reproduce the thing. But I just wanted to briefly highlight that a citizen may request information, that it does not require a journalist or someone who's trained in journalism to make a request of an entity or an organization that's public.
No.
They can just do that. In fact, the record-keeping requirements are specifically to the benefit of the public.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why there are things that you have to keep for a certain number of days, weeks, months, years, is because if somebody wants to see them, they have the right to do that. I think the logic is if your taxes are used to benefit an organization, that organization has to kind of make certain records available.
In fact, if you want, I mean, I can add some links to the bottom of the page on KETR.org for this episode and just show an example of what a Public Information Act request looks like.
That would be, I think, a neat and sort of a nice exploration of the nuts and bolts of, so you don't have to be like a Jimmy Olsen or whatever. You can kind of.
No, I mean, I don't think we need to like pretend that we have some magical ability that everyone else doesn't,
right,
possess.
Other than, like you said, the time to do it.
Right.
And but then you also threw out a number, 100 requests. And
that was maybe this time last year, there were 100 requests. Now it's.
But I just wanted to say that it's a very real number that is probably north of that, the number of requests that you've made in relation to this podcast.
Until December of last year, I think we were trying to make one almost every single day of the month starting in June. So.
Right. And it's not about tying up the people who are charged with responding to them. It's about getting access to the information.
It's actually the opposite of that, because I could have sent 50 requests at once to Hunt County Sheriff's Office. Instead, I sent them over a long period of time so that they actually wouldn't
be forced to waste time to respond to them.
Because otherwise, there is that 10-day rule. And so, you could theoretically I actually don't know what happens. I don't know if you send 100 requests that are completely impossible to respond to in 10 days. I don't actually know if they get in trouble or what, because...
No, but what happens, I can tell you from another organization of which I have been a part, that that what happens is legislation gets introduced that sort of clamps down on people's ability to ask for the information.
Right, so
it's one thing is like it's a information requests tend to be a often if it's necessary, it's inevitably an underfunded sort of concept in whatever agency that has to respond to them. If it's something that people are curious about, they never have enough resource. Yeah. If you go forever and nobody ever asks a question, you don't need more than one person who part of their job is to do that. There was another question. It's in the same vein of the reckless. It says, looked up charges were for reckless driving speeding. This doesn't seem like a charge that would normally land a person in jail, but you already mentioned it was for warrants.
Yeah, exactly. She wasn't arrested for speeding. She was arrested for not appearing to handle that, which would happen to anyone, even today.
Talking about Kerry Parker again.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're hopping around, but we got a lot of cover.
That's true. Because the last three episodes of this discussion episode are based on, one of them focused on a different missing person, who was Sarah Kinslow, who we just mentioned, and her ties to Waco Bay, and oddly to the Kerry Parker case in some ways. So we have sort of a little bit broader of a topic than usual today.
It's like so many things that I don't think about until like I'm listening, if I'm driving along and listening to the podcast, I'm like, ooh, I wonder that. But I think something that speaks to that is I'm always interested in the behind the scenes things, because that's what I end up getting, because it's George's fault. But it's also his fault that I don't maintain too much curiosity beyond what's presented in the program, because I think that a thorough job is being done with regard to sort of the angles that need to be, like, did this happen? Did that happen? What order did it happen in? Doesn't this conflict with something else in the series? And one of the things that I think is a benefit to this program, and I don't mean for this to be a commercial for the podcast, but that when you make reference to something that happened in episode 2, in the second segment or whatever, then you'll say, if you listen back to episode 2 in the second segment, we dealt with this.
Right, yeah.
So it's kind of neat that it's being archived as we go. And so lots of folks will listen to everything up till now.
Yeah. And I think that also sort of the last episode will be important in that way, because it's sort of its own little standalone episode about Sarah Kinslow, who's a different person, who's not the focus of this podcast herself. You know, the podcast is about Kerry Parker and always has been. But, you know, some of that plan also has been to include Sarah Kinslow. And of course, this has been the case since the very beginning. But, I thought I'd mention that, because I saw that on Facebook somebody had mentioned that, you know, not knowing whether or not this podcast was going to stick to Kerry Parker or go to, you know, other people. And I mean, we've talked about this multiple times, but it keeps coming up somehow. There's this conspiracy theory, I guess, that we're going to one day drop Kerry Parker, move on to someone else, and that's going to be it. But of course, that's not true. That was another question.
Yeah, we've got a roadmap for what Buried is going to be, and it ties back to Kerry. It's going to continue tying back to Kerry.
Yeah.
Because there's, I don't know how to explain how much more information there is, but it's, I can't quantify it except to say in weeks worth of work, right? Really the only way. It's like weeks and weeks worth of work.
Yeah.
Yet.
I think that I can guarantee that by the end of this podcast, you will understand why Sarah Kinslow is part of Kerry Parker's story, put it that way.
Right. If it's not clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we talk about where we're headed next? I mean, I realize that we want to keep some of that.
I think we can. I mean, it's at least if people are asking the question, I don't see any reason why we would not answer it. You know,
well, other than, you know, why are you not talking about Kerry Parker right now? Not
this that moment, question. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, actually, you know, it was really interesting to me. It looked like from just the broad indication I get when I log into our website that the episode about Sarah Kinslow was like a lot more popular than normal. People were super into it. I don't know if you've looked into that, but
so I've got a few different tools available, metric tools available to be able to see, but I think that can most aptly be explained by, number one, the podcast is gaining steam, mm-hmm. and so every time something new is published, it's going to have more ears than the last one. I mean, that's I'm not going to say it's a given. We sincerely appreciate those of you who listen to the podcast and then tell your friends about it and say, hey, this is one that's worth getting hooked. In a lot of cases, I think the context is they finally have enough episodes to really get hooked. So, and we get that and we understand, but we are making this thing in real time. It's a creative choice we made and we're sticking with it, by golly.
Yeah.
But also because the Kinslow case was more recent and more people are going, it's going to be fresher in more folks' minds.
Yeah.
Which I think is created the value out of the like the missing seven or missing six or whatever Facebook page out there. So a lot of people are wanting to keep up with, you know, what's happening to these folks who have gone missing. Sorry, good.
No, I was just going to add that I remember when that was happening when I was younger, and that was a name that I remember hearing.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the reason why, unfortunately, Carrie Mae Parker's name didn't get as much attention to it. But I remember Sarah Kinslow being a household name in this area.
Yeah.
So I, and as I've told Jared before, me working here, I've had the opportunity, if I wanted to learn more information as y'all were gathering it, to kind of have an insider status. But I have specifically requested to be let out of it because I want to hear it unfold in storytelling form, and I want to experience it as a listener. So I've kind of like covered my ears whenever there's a new development, and I'm enjoying watching it or listening to it unravel.
You have seen it. You walk by. Yes. You see, we operate for the most part. I don't mind saying that no matter where we are ginning up new content, in studio, we're doing it oftentimes in this room, which we lovingly refer to as the fishbowl.
Yep.
So people can walk by and sort of make faces on the glass and whatever it is that they do. Stand out there and make the noises they think that radio people make whenever they're...
the NPR voice that we're all reminded to do. Now that we have like, this...
The quiet storm. Yeah, exactly. But it's fun to kind of see things on the inside, but I guess I kind of get where you're coming from. I mean, I think a lot of people do. But another thing, too, is that the Facebook.com existed when Sarah Kinslow disappeared.
Yeah,
or it nearly
to,
did.
Yeah,
it was about to come. Yeah. But what I'm saying is the Kinslow case didn't have as much to catch up on in terms of social media sort of steam than the Parker case has had to do.
People don't need us to learn about her, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Although they kind of did need us to hear about the connections to Quinlan and Waco Bay. That's something that has really amazed me and is about how close... I mean, just if you look it up on Google Maps, I mean, you look up Waco Bay and Lake Tawakoni, we're talking about like a couple blocks. It's pretty crazy that two missing people have such intimate ties to these areas. And yeah, so.
Well, there's the whole of it. And we are going to continue to explore what we can, but we know that there's so much more information around the corner about the Parker case that's being sort of quantified and classified each week. I said week's worth of work to make you a 1 hour episode and hopefully something that you connect with and you have value, gain value from it. And if you do, consider supporting it with a contribution. There are a number of ways to do that, but the easiest one is to go to the host station's website, ketr.org, click the donate button, and then just mention, by the way, this is in support of the podcast, Buried. Be specific, because the station is actually engaged in a number of podcast endeavors, but Buried, I don't mind saying, because I work on it, that Buried's kind of out in front when it comes to the audience, based on the content. We talk all the time about how it's different, how it's not like a typical whodunit podcast. We're not speculating. We're only presenting factual information and all of that. So hopefully by now it's sunk in and there's value there. And it's worth supporting financially because it is not a free thing to make. It's not a free thing to do. It wouldn't be a free thing to do even if everyone who worked on it were strictly volunteers because stamps cost money. I mean, everything... related to the program is a cost endeavor, but it's something that the station and its departments ought to be engaged in, and so it's easy to make the choice, but it would be easier still if you would be so kind as to support it again by going to ketr.org and clicking the donate button and marking up Buried. In fact, if you give online, we'll make sure you get a Buried sticker. We have stickers. We're one of those podcasts now.
We've entered the big leagues now. I've already. And that reminds me.
Feels that way. Yeah.
I'm running out of the stickers. I keep sending them.
If I get you a Sharpie, you could sign them.
That's right.
A gold Sharpie, because they're mostly...
That would make them very valuable.
There you go. So you want an autographed George Hale buried sticker. We can make that happen for you.
Wow.
Yeah. Happy to do it. Happy to do it.
I feel such a grown-up now.
You start autographing a 3-inch sticker to put in the mail,
yes.
Which is just going to cost more stamps. I mean, everything is a reason to make that contribution right now. You can connect with Buried in a lot of ways. You can go to facebook.com/buriedradio. You can go to instagram.com/buried.radio.
Yeah. That's my favorite of the social media things, I think. Not I don't use Instagram that much personally, but I love the Buried one because this photographer, Brittany Greider, who worked with us on capturing some of these places, is so talented. I've really enjoyed using her photos.
There are more still.
Oh, yeah. Every week there's more.
So, you can definitely see sort of a collage of buried places and images by checking that out. And then we're on Twitter.
Yep.
Twitter.com.
Buried Radio.
/buriedradio. Sometimes we have a dot and sometimes we don't. It's a toss-up. It's like a fun hunt you can go on.
Yeah. What really happened was somebody, I have no idea who, would have done this, but on Instagram they took our one without the dot. So the question was, do we add dots?
Those
to the
monsters.
No.
Do they not know what kind of woods we're willing to traipse around in?
That was a pretty, you know, I say creative title, but actually, what other title could we have possibly given to this podcast?
Yeah, I think Buried's fun. Yeah,
the last couple of episodes.
Yeah, no, Buried's the only way it could go. Yeah. Initially, the art. I remember a conversation. Initially, the art included stone that had been dampened.
Yeah,
and so. Be that as it may, let folks dig it up. You'll figure out why.
Yeah.
We had initially talked about wet stone.
That's right.
On the pie. In fact, there was an initial image that's no longer available. Anyway, a lot to get to, but we're going forth, and we hope that you are bringing friends along for the ride. So please share on social media, share all the places that you would, share with your friends who you know would be into a true crime podcast. Share with everyone, because we think that it's a valuable story, it's worth telling. And as yet, there's no clear time for the story to wrap up. There's no bow. Necessarily, we have only the information that we have. We will eventually run out of new information.
Yeah,
but I mean, inevitably. But there's no. I mean, this thing's not done yet. If it were done, we would tell you.
Yeah,
that's. I got no reason to keep anything close to the vest there. If we would interrupt regular programming to tell you how the thing resolved.
I mean, that would be amazing.
Even if we had to forego potential revenue, we would do that.
Yeah. So yeah, don't ever worry that you won't hear it right away. You don't have to. To check anywhere else, you know, we'll let you know first.
Breaking a case is going to come from right here.
If one occurs.
Corinne, thank you so much for joining us on The Buried Lead.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
George.
Thanks.
I'm Jared Knight. Thanks for listening. Buried is a production of 88.9 KETR-FM in Commerce, Texas, and of KETR.org. Its host and principal reporter is George Hale. Executive producer is Jared Knight, with production help from Emma Anderson. Theme music is composed and performed by Brad Davis, and cover art was designed by Crystal Sid. You can catch up on previous episodes at KETR.org/buried or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening.